it's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 1st of August, 2015. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, and it's brought to you with the support of the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua. I'm Chris Walker, and on the 1st of August, I talked to the CEO of Solar City, installers of solar panels on the new library. I was joined by Waiheke musician Frankie Hill talking about the recent release of material from her 90s band Fatal Jelly Space. And then the opinionated Islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone gave their views on recent island affairs. Then I was joined by Bex Ballard of the local board, who gave an overview of her board portfolio areas. We've got Andrew Booth on the line. He's the CEO of Solar City. And Solar City are the organisation who've been responsible for putting the solar panels up on the new Waiheke Library, which raised a few eyebrows when all the scaffolding went up there so soon after completion. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Yeah, good morning. Very well. Yourself?
I'm very good. So tell us a little bit about this library project and how that came about.
Yeah, it was a great project, actually. The City Council in Auckland have been trying to make a big commitment going forward to reducing the carbon footprint of the city. And the library was a second in a series of projects that they're planning across the city now to try and really make some quite big public statements about the fact that solar is becoming increasingly economic and is the right choice for many Kiwis who are trying to lock in a better price per power, but also do the right thing by the environment.
So with something like the library building, I mean, presumably you've crunched the numbers to figure out what kind of impact you can have on the energy consumption.
Yeah, we did a detailed assessment. So we looked at the sort of orientation of the roof in relationship to the sun and the orientation of the sun's and its ability to sort of generate power, and we calculated within around 1% how much power it would save the library every year, and also how much carbon it would save. So the amount of carbon alone that it saves every year is the equivalent to planting about almost 3,000 trees on the island. So it makes a really big contribution to reducing the island's footprint, but also making sure that the library itself economically is locking in a fixed price basically for its daytime power well into the future, making it much more economic to run.
So with carbon, I mean, I know that, you know, carbon calculations are a big part of people looking at alternative energy sources and why they might do that. But in New Zealand, you know, so much of our power is produced in sustainable ways anyway, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's at 85% through hydro. And one of the big companies recently shelving plans to build a new gas-fired plant. Is the impetus to move to solar here as important as it might be, say, in place where they're relying much more on coal and gas-fired production?
Yeah, I guess it's, you know, one of the key points about the nation really is that sort of sustainability of its existing energy. I think from a philosophical standpoint, the nation historically back in the 60s was 100% renewable. It's now around 85% renewable. One of the greatest things in this nation, I believe, is the fact that we have an ability to make a step change and, identify a way in which we can get towards that 100% goal. Many nations in the world now are heading towards that 100%, and I think New Zealand is in a great position to reclaim that leadership position which he held back in the 60s and try and create far more cleaner, greener jobs than it has done historically.
So I suppose for a number of years people have seen, you know, not as commonly as we might want, but have seen solar water heating systems installed on houses, and in more recent years moving to solar panels, you know. And so for something like our library here, which where during the day most of their power is going to be, you know, lighting, running their computers, and kind of maintaining the climate control in the building, that's going to have a significant impact. But in the average home, you know, what kind of percentages are those kind of consumptions? Because we're talking daytime only here, aren't we? I mean, what kind of impact or percentage does that make up of an average home's energy consumption?
Yeah, for daytime power for an average home, you've got to bear in mind that the PV as well that's on the roof during the day also preferentially heats water and not water cylinder. So it's around 30% of energy consumption is daytime energy consumption. So you're effectively targeting that percentage. And it really depends, you know, with PV certainly in terms of your profile of usage on how much, as you rightly say, you do spend at home during the day. And it, certainly in terms of the profile of the projects that we're delivering, we always try and ensure that we accurately assess how much energy the consumer is using in their home during the day and match that with the amount of solar we put on the roof. The key really with solar in terms of the economics of it is to make sure that you maximize the amount of solar you're using on site so you offset the maximum price that you would be paying for retail power.
So for a home consumer who's, you know, thinking about, I suppose, about two things, thinking about the environment and thinking about their wallet, they've got a number of different options to weigh up, haven't they? They can look at solar water heating. They can look at solar generation of their daytime power, or they can and look at reduction. And, the, you know, with LED lighting and so on, that must, you know, how does it balance out in terms of weighing those options one against the other for maximum bang for the buck?
I think that, you know, in terms of the investments that you can make, our sort of guidance really is that you should ensure that your home is fully insulated and that you're using energy-efficient appliances really before you start to look at solar. Solar effectively allows you to ensure that you can increase your savings over time, but certainly some of the early and easiest low-hanging fruit in terms of cost savings still remain in that space of energy efficiency and insulation. What solar does is it locks the forward price of power at today's rates if you're part of our Solar Zero program, or reduces it completely if you buy a system for cash. So solar allows you to reduce significantly your forward running costs, and what energy efficiency appliances do is they drop quite significantly the requirement for the quantum of energy you need to run your home. So the two together are important. Energy efficiency is always what we recommend as the first step, because obviously the amount of power you need to generate yourself, the less amount of power you need to generate using solar, the more economic it becomes.
So the project on the library here, I suppose, is, That was a big installation, wasn't it? I mean, what would something like that cost if, you know, if a business was, say, looking at putting in something like that?
Yeah, the installation on the library was a sort of smaller scale commercial system of around 20.8 kilowatt peaks. So you're looking at in the region of $25,000 to $35,000 to put that scale of a system on a roof. Obviously, the savings are directly related to that. For many sort of commercial companies across New Zealand, because they're paying significantly less for power than a residential consumer, in many cases almost a third less, solar for many commercial companies simply won't make economic sense on day one. So in many respects, it's the residential consumer who, you know, frankly, over the last 20 years has seen massive power price increases who have the most to benefit from solar.
You've done this, you know, in conjunction with the council, but I suppose, you know, if we're being honest, it's kind of an advertisement on a grand scale, isn't it, Andrew? So you've got a scheme that you're rolling out on the island, haven't you?
Yeah, we do. I mean, I don't see it as an advertisement. I mean, I think many people, certainly internationally now, you know, believe that we're the last generation that can stop climate change, and that drive towards being 100% renewable is at the forefront of many families and many politicians' minds at the moment, that we have to do the right thing to make sure that future generations are in with a chance. We have a variety of different approaches to going solar. Solar Zero we launched on Waikiki, which is a unique way in which you can effectively not buy the panels themselves, but buy the power they generate and fix the price that you're paying for that power across a 20-year horizon. So it puts solar in the reach of ordinary Kiwis for the first time, so that everyone has an opportunity to do the right thing in terms of future generations, but also lock in a more affordable price for power.
So how do people find out more about this and if it's the right thing for their household?
The simplest thing to do is to go online to our website at solarcity.co.nz and register for a consultation by one of our specialists. They'll look at your power bills and look at the geography and the orientation of your roof and give you very accurate guidance as to whether solar does or doesn't make sense for you from day one, and then talk you through the variety of options available.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. And have you had any reports? I mean, for the library here, will it make any difference in their day-to-day function? Are they going to notice the difference of having that stuff up there?
No, solar is a seamless, very reliable technology that provides power on a consistent basis. In many respects, it relies simply on the sun coming up every day. And if the sun doesn't come up every day, I think we've got bigger problems than you probably want to talk about.
Yeah, well, the sun's certainly out here today. So thank you very much for joining us, Andrew.
Thank you.
That's Andrew Booth, CEO of SolarCity. And you're listening to Waiheke Radio. And we should just mention, of course, that there are other solar energy providers on the island as well. So SolarCity is one amongst the options there. I know that the Energy Centre in Tahirobe is offering some seminars on that as well. So do your shopping around and see if that's the right thing for you.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Yes, this is Island Life on Waiheke Radio, and one of the people, hopefully, who will be here very, very soon is Frankie Hill, who in the 80s and 90s was part of a band called Fatal Jelly Space. They're a pretty ferocious live outfit, and they put out a release on Flying Nun, and also did some other recordings, which didn't see the light of day, but have been released over the last little while, and so hopefully Frankie will be in to talk to us about that very, very shortly. And what I want to play for you here is something which was recorded here on Waiheke quite some time ago now. This was back in the days of The Beach, when The Beach was the radio station here on the island, 2003, so 12 odd years ago. Frankie came in and performed on a show I had, Counting the Beat, which was a kind of New Zealand music show. During New Zealand Music Month in 2003, we featured live performances, and this is one that she recorded back in the day. She did an acoustic version of one of those Fatal Jelly Space songs. Here's Frankie Fatal.
love you're wasting away. Cannot believe you're leaving. I feel so cold. I feel so old. While you lie in your grave, we'll misbehave. Cause you're dying. I'm lost in a hole. Down deep in your soul, love. But now I'm crying. I tried to find a way. Oh, under your skin, and into your misery. I feel so cold. I feel so old. I'm strong to the jumping right in. I'm joining the fun. Oh, break out of my skin. I come from the earth. Go to the stars. I'm no fire. I live in it all. If you want to join me, you must be alive. Come in the fold. in the fall. Break out of my, break out of my skin.
Yeah, that was Frankie Hill, and that was recorded live on the beach in 2003. I remember having goosebumps when that played, actually, Frankie, because I was a big fan of the Fatal Jelly Space EP, and to hear that song treated that way was a real treat. So, well, Frankie has just walked in.
You have to tell me what the song was.
It was, what song was it? It was, oh, I don't know what it was called.
Was it an old Fatal song?
Yeah.
It was probably You're Wasting Away.
Yeah, that's it.
I can't think of the name. I'm having a senior moment.
There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we just played that. Yes. Yeah. So Frankie, so Fatal Jelly Space, I mean, in my mind, were a significant band.
in my mind they were too.
Yeah. And you know, I suppose people think of Flying Nun, and just pull that microphone down a little bit so you don't have to crane yourself so much.
I don't think it's going to stay that way.
No, that's all right. Okay. Boing. Well, you can bend it.
Yeah, the mics at the B were like that too.
Yeah.
Up and down.
Yeah, maybe not quite so much.
Not quite so much.
Yeah, that's good.
Like that?
Yeah, we're good.
All right.
Okay, so people think of Flying Nun, an iconic New Zealand label, and probably think of kind of jangle pop, you know, the Clean, Tally Ho, which is up for the 1981 Silver Scroll
fantastic
at the moment.
Fantastic song.
Yeah, and, you know, and the Chills, and who've got a new album coming out and stuff like that.
Also fantastic band.
You know, so, but there's kind of, I suppose, this the stereotyping of the kind of jangle pop, you know, influenced by the Velvet Underground, by the Birds and so on. Mm. Fatal Jelly Space weren't like that at all.
Mm.
So how did you end up on Flying Nun?
I'm not really sure. I think we sucked Roger in, actually, because in the early days, a lot of the stuff that we did was written prior to the formation of the band by Jacinda and Rachel, who were two people who performed under the name The Groovy Girls, and they wrote this really great, fantastic, short little catchy pop songs. They were like 2.5 minutes long. Songs like Cut Off Your Boyfriend's Head. I like Black Levi's because they look so good on guys. You know, they were really catchy, really punchy, and some of our songs were like that. But as we came together as a unit and started to write together, that changed. And so I've always suspected that Roger signed us on the strength of that early stuff, and by the time we came to actually record and put out the album, the EP, we'd kind of changed, yeah.
Yeah. So the band was around what, from the late 80s through to the mid 90s?
Yeah, early 90s, not mid, yeah. We had one lineup change, and we kind of limped along for about a year with that lineup change and then broke up, yeah. Because when that sort of combination of people wasn't there anymore, it just didn't really work.
And so, you put out the whole EP, came out what year?
I think it was 91. Yeah, I can't remember numbers.
Yeah. So 91, so I suppose in a way, I mean, you know, at a similar kind of time, or perhaps a little later, was when that whole, you know, in the US, the Riot Girl kind of movement with bands like Bikini Kill and stuff like that was taking off. But you didn't kind of manage to get on the crest of that wave, did you?
No, well, I guess we weren't really trying to. When we first started, it was you know, we were just having fun and we didn't have any particular agenda. And it kind of went a lot further than any of us really ever thought it would. Yeah. I mean, it was fantastic that it did. But I'm not particularly driven in that regard, and I'm not sure that any of the others were either, you know. So it just kind of happened. We sort of fell into it, yeah.
And so you put out the EP, you featured on the Shrewd Flying Nun compilation of Flying Nun acts, you know, female acts.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you were playing all around the country as well, weren't you?
Yeah, it was fantastic. I loved it. Yeah.
I remember seeing you playing at, I think, Dunedin Town Hall as part of
it. Oh, that would have been the Smoke-Free Women's thing that we did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was great. We got flown down. We felt like rock stars. Yeah.
And so as well as the EP, though, you did some other recordings back then that didn't come out at the time, didn't
you? Yeah, that's right, because those recordings were done kind of, well, we wrote the music, we wrote the material, and then the band kind of ended up being in the state of flux, and one of our key members left and was replaced, and we had to rejig some of them, and we did the recordings without one of the people that had kind of been instrumental in writing them, and then the band kind of petered out, really. So, yeah, they just sat there for a long, long time. And we had a reunion dinner a little while ago. Catherine, the drummer, came back from Australia, and we managed to hunt down everybody else. And we and Sarah, who was the keyboard player, came up from Wellington, where she lives now. And we got together with Suzanne, our old manager, and from there, I'd been trying, actually, for a while before that, to resecure the rights to our old stuff from Flying Nun, because Flying Nun had kind of gotten purchased by... I can't remember.
Warner's, I think.
Yeah. It ended up in Warner's stable, and it wasn't really going anywhere. And then Roger and someone else purchased it back. And I ran into Roger and said to him, you know, I'd really like to buy the rights. And it kind of... He said, yeah, cool. And that never went anywhere. And so, yeah, I'd thought about it, and they obviously thought about it. So we just started putting out what we had, our old demos and some live recordings and the actual kind of, the rough mixes of the recordings that we did. We've lost the originals. We never mixed them down properly, never did mastering or anything like that. So, yeah, they just... I guess essentially pretty expensive demos, yeah. That was some stuff. So, but they're all going out on Facebook and Bandcamp, which is great.
Yeah, and I thought we might play something.
Yeah, fantastic.
So, is there anything particularly you want to play? So, there's you've got the Fatals Live, the live album up there, and what else? We've got American Dog Food. We've got Madman's Kingdom. Voodoo Pin, Boyfriend's Head,
yeah.
Hog Heaven,
yeah.
The Dark is Rising. What do you want?
Is that from the live one or the...
Which one?
The Dark is Rising.
Dark is Rising. Let's have a little look.
Because there's a version on Fatals Live, but there's also...
Oh, no, this is the... no, I don't think this is the live one. It doesn't say, actually.
Oh, yeah, that'll do, Dark is Rising.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So this was recorded where and when?
It was at the lab, when the lab was in Simon Street. And it would have been... probably in 92, maybe the beginning of 93. Like I said, I can't remember numbers, so and it's all a blur. But it was the early days of Kiwi... No, had Kiwi FM started? Maybe not. I think Karen Hay was doing a show on BFM, actually, because we rushed up with one of the mixes and she played it before we'd... yeah, so that was before Kiwi FM had started, and Karen and
Thingam. Yeah, it would have been well before, yeah.
Fagan, yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, anyway, so yeah.
Okay, well, let's give it a spin.
Yeah.
If you want to forget, fataljellyspace.bandcamp.com. That's The Dark Is Rising from Fatal Jelly Space, and Frankie from Fatal Jelly Space is with us. So you're saying there's a video out for that, Frankie?
Yes, Jacinda, who's the lead singer in that track, a fantastically talented woman, is an animator, and she has made an animated video for it, which is up on our Facebook page. So if you search Fatal Jelly Space on Facebook, you'll find it. Yeah, it's fantastic, and because she wrote the words to that song. That song was kind of a tribute to a series of books that she was into. The Dark Is Rising, I think, is the name of the series. I can't remember the name of the author, but there's a note about it on the video.
Oh, yeah, Susan Cooper.
So So it's a really cool little video. It's great.
All this stuff has come back out now, and I mean, obviously, there's a sense of pride in what the band did and the songs you recorded. So is there more to it than that? Are you planning reunions or anything?
No. I wouldn't know how to play any of those songs anymore. We've all got very, very different lives now, and I don't know. I guess you should never say never, but I don't know. It's not something that's in the forefront for me. I probably wouldn't say no if someone said, "Do you want to do one Fatal Jelly Space gig for blah blah?" But I don't know. I sort of feel like I've moved on, and everybody else has moved on. Really, it's a nice memory that we've all got together, and I am really proud of what we achieved and what we, that music. I really like that music, and I still think that, we were genuinely artistically inclined, as a band. It wasn't about getting famous or getting rich. We were just really interested in making music that was interesting and artistic and fulfilling in some way. So and consciously sort of trying not to fall into old musical cliches, we were conscious about that too. So Yeah, so that's a bit of a long, rambling answer to that question.
Well, no, and, for fans like me, and I think for anyone interested in kind of alternative music from New Zealand, and that, I think what was a very kind of rich and prolific era, the late 80s and 90s, you should certainly check out fataljellyspace.bandcamp.com.
Cheers.
And it's a great listen. You're still dabbling in music, of course.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't call it dabbling. I'm still... not that I'm offended by that, but, yeah. No, music's part of my life, and I'll never stop playing music, regardless of, whether anybody wants to actually see me play live or not. It's just part of who I am, and I think that's probably true for everybody in the band to some extent or other, that music's just... For some people, music's not part of their life, and I find that very puzzling. But, music's just there. Always will be.
Oh, well, thanks very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you for asking me, and I'm very, very sorry I was late.
Oh, well, it was nice because it gave us a chance to listen to Miseria, Fatal Jelly Space, your version of that. So thanks very much. That's Frankie Hill, and as I say, fataljellyspace.bandcamp.com.
Wakey Radio.
It's time for our opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. Hold on, let's get you turned on.
There okay.
You are we turned on now?
I was already turned on.
There's much to be opinionated about today. What do you reckon?
There certainly is.
Mm-hmm. I was just enjoying, though, listening to Frankie before, and I'd have to say that if Fatal Jelly Space isn't the best band name ever, it's got to be in the top 10 list.
Well, speaking of fancy names, what about these little slogans that try and say what Waiheke's all about?
Yes. Oh, do you want the headphones?
Yeah. Okay. What's that? I can hear. I can hear something.
Can't you?
Is that a helicopter?
Oh my God! It's helicopters.
This whole drama about helicopters coming to the island, I think, is quite amusing. It brings to mind just about every Vietnam movie you've ever seen opens with the lineup of Huey helicopters across the screen in the sunset, and it sounds like it's going to become the soundtrack of Waiheke.
Yes, indeed. it was quite amazing to see the number of helicopter movements, they call them. And we were just saying it's quite apt that a helicopter disgorging a trio of rich scum should be called a movement, which pops out of the helicopter.
Sounds
that's
about
quite
like
appropriate.
Something to do with the bowels, yeah.
But yes, we've just seen this in the paper this week that the what used to be Saratoga, and of course in Waiheke style, they can rename themselves, but we'll still be calling it Saratoga for the next 10 years. Tantalus, sorry, that's what it should be. Tantalus have applied for...
Is it 450?
Just while you look it up, I forgot to do something. It's time to talk to the opinionated islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone.
No, you said that.
Yeah,
you
said that. Did I? Yeah, we did.
You said
done that bit. All right.
I missed it.
Try and
keep up. I was on autopilot.
It's in the paper this week. Yes, uproar over helicopter plans. Now, the application says as many as 30 helicopters a day could fly in and out from 72 and Onitangi Road and comply with the noise limit set in the district plan, so long as a three-day limit of 90 movements was not exceeded. Well, for a start, does Auckland even have that many helicopters?
Oh, that's a point, yeah. We could always rent some old Vietnam movie props, you know. They've got to be bunched. Because I've always, whenever you see a movie in the US, they've got this seemingly inexhaustible supply of old police cars that they trash in the car chase. So there must be a big supplier of helicopters somewhere.
Helicopters are very, very expensive. I don't know how many are based in the Auckland region. It'd be interesting to find out. In fact, I might do a bit of digging.
There's that famous Monty Python movie where the guys do like horse riding and they go clippity-clop with the coconuts. Well, we could get Waiheke eccentrics. We could pay them to gallop down the road going dug-dug-dug-dug-dug-dug and pretend we're the helicopter.
You know, in Rotorua Island, they want gannets. They want to set up a gannet colony. Yeah. So in the trees on the cliffs, they have loudspeakers playing gannet sounds to attract the gannets.
Why? Isn't it smelly enough there?
Well, maybe we
already
could set up some loudspeakers to play some helicopter sounds to attract
the rich people might feel as if they... You know, all's well if there's a sound of a helicopter in the background, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's like a cargo cult, you know? The helicopters will come and disgorge rich people.
Oh, don't get any Waihikian started on the whole cargo cult mentality. I mean, it's as far as Pacific Islanders pursuing cargo cults, we're right up there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was just looking up the movements from... And, yeah, I like this movements idea. Cable Bay... This is back in June.
They got busted, eh?
They were busted from for exceeding their helicopter movements. The company exceeded either the maximum of 10 helicopter movements in a 30-day period or the maximum 4 movements in a 7-day period. So that doesn't strike me as a lot, and he was done for exceeding it. What they're proposing at Tantalus would seem to be a pretty much a continuous flow of helicopters moving in and out of the place.
What would that do
to the atmosphere of
the
anyone?
Restaurant, yeah.
Yes, if you've paid something like $1,000 to be there for lunch, and it'd be like sitting in Vung Tau in 1972.
Yeah, but also you'd be
blowing around.
You'd be
the place.
Sitting there al fresco having your dining, and this helicopter arrives with a downdraft. Your salad will be suddenly blowing around your face and your hairdo and everything. You know, it'll be.
It's a shame, actually. In the Gulf News article, the Gulf News in its usual, you know, we just got up and we haven't had any coffee yet style, hasn't actually talked to the people at Tantalus and got any opinions from them. Do they really want to have the place with that much helicopter noise around the place?
Well, maybe it's a whole one-upmanship thing, you know. If Cable Bay got busted for 17 helicopter movements, these guys are on 400 helicopter movements. It's like, I've got more helicopters than you.
I mean, we at Wild and Waiheke, I think we probably get about 6 a year.
Yeah.
and the helicopters can land a fair distance away from where people are trying to enjoy lunch. But it's pretty annoying having a helicopter come in.
Well, if I may get serious for a moment, it's also...
No.
not, but it's actually quite obscene, you know, to fly in a helicopter from town to here costs in the order of $800 or something like that. So you're going to be spending $1,000 for lunch? Is this right?
Yeah, there is a kind of a end of the Roman Empire feel to that kind of display of wealth.
Yeah, well, we all know the Romans, they ran out of helicopters.
Yes.
There's none left there. Did they? Run out of helicopters
there. Absolutely, yeah. if they could have had helicopters, they would have had them, definitely. But, yeah, it's... How far are you prepared to push the patience of your neighbours, though, with an application like that?
Yeah.
I mean, Stony Ridge gets a fair few. And yes, after a while, it does get pretty annoying in the middle of summer.
Yeah.
But you'd have to limit it, as I say, for the atmosphere at your own venue.
Well, if we're cool, clean, green Waihikians, maybe we should insist that the helicopters that come here are silent, electrically driven, nuclear-free, you know, hybrid helicopters that don't make any noise. How's that?
That you have to pedal or something.
Yeah, pedal. Yes. But like the Flintstone helicopter.
Didn't Leonardo da Vinci design something exactly like that? He had a sort of pedal-powered thing. Maybe we should go back to his blueprints.
I wonder if the rich folk would be fit enough to pedal-power a helicopter. You know, this could be the new thing. Show that you're fit enough to get here under your own pedal-powered helicopter. Why don't you just catch a ferry?
Yes.
I mean, got to keep the ferries going, eh?
Exactly.
Well, we could become the first island in the world to ban helicopters entirely. How's that?
Oh, I don't... Well, I mean, for a start, you couldn't ban them entirely because that would leave the Westpac rescue helicopter.
Oh, out of work, yeah.
Yes,
and you're right.
And
yeah,
we do need that.
Yeah, and there are emergencies, true emergencies, yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't we just say helicopters only for true emergencies and $1,000 lunch doesn't count as an emergency? That's a policy.
You could.
I could run for Parliament on that. You could run for the local board on that policy.
Personally, I wouldn't. I mean, I don't mind the odd helicopter coming in if it's going to bring in rich fools to be fleeced. But there comes a point, and again, it's back to the killing of the goose that laid the golden eggs. How many helicopters can you have in the sky over Waiheke at one time before the whole thing just becomes intolerable and no one wants to come here because it just isn't that peaceful
anymore? But I'm not so sure about your logic, because if you go down your route of logic, we'll be asking someone to decide for us how many helicopters is the right amount, and that's the basis of this story.
Well,
we already have
people at Auckland City Council who decide this based on
something.
Well, incentives, usually.
It said, yeah, something in the article. The district plan, so as long as to a three-day limit of 90 movements was not exceeded. So somewhere in the district plan, it must say 90 movements is allowed. There you go. Hmm.
Is it just me? But when I was a kid, whenever a helicopter went past, there's a helicopter, and I have to rush out and look.
Yeah.
And now, at 47 years of age, I still do that.
Hmm.
Am I the only one who does that?
I think you might be, yeah. The only thing that would get me rushing out of the house is the sound of a piston-driven vintage aircraft.
Yeah.
One of those radial ones that will make
like that lovely little float plane that goes over. Every time I hear that, it's like, wow, that sounds really vintage.
Well, yeah, there's that DC-3 that flies over sometimes. That's right.
So if we've got someone there, some official, some bureaucrat, maybe someone in the new Waiheke breakaway bureaucracy, we'll have a sound aesthetics person. Frankie could be it, because Frankie could say, this helicopter doesn't sound good. It doesn't have the right syncopation, whereas a Dakota, old DC-3 aeroplane, that sounds authentic. And, you know, you could have someone who says the sounds, we could have a sound stylist for the airs, the atmosphere of Waiheke.
Yeah.
Are we getting close now?
One of the best sounds I've over the island that you've ever heard is that I think there's a group of at least three of them who fly out of somewhere like Ardmore, and they fly some vintage Chinese single-engine planes, and they do formation flying and stuff. And during the summer, they do come over. The sound of them coming in the distance, that would have me out on the deck. Where are they?
Maybe I'm a, forgive me for being an old tree hugger, but I love the sound of a kaka flying over our place at Palm Beach. Happens about once a week now. Mm. And they've got, I'm sure Frankie would agree, that they contribute to the soundscape of the skies of Waiheke in a
Kaka positive. Certainly do. Kaka always sound to me like they're on the way home from the pub late at night. There's a very raucous and disorganized sound to a trio of Kaka.
Yeah, spoken like a true brewer.
They always sound a bit drunk.
Yeah, there you go. But now there's... Could you imagine a drunken helicopter pilot? Maybe they should.
No, I wouldn't want to.
So the soundscape of Waiheke needs to be monitored. by somebody.
Well, the thing that will monitor it is the sound of tourists leaving in droves because they can't hear themselves think.
Yeah. Well, there's always the sugar in the tank approach. I had a bad thought the other day, and I must admit, I must come clean now, I didn't actually do it, but there's a jet ski parked in a beachside batch on Palm Beach, and I thought, if I just loosened the petrol cap a bit and sprinkled some sugar around on the seat, you know. But I wouldn't actually put the sugar in the petrol tank. Now, that's going a bit far. But if you just left the clues as if it might have been, do you think that would have been?
Yeah, nothing says I am a genuinely dreadful person like owning a jet ski.
Yeah, probably more so than the $1,000 lunch from a helicopter.
Yeah. Jet skis, that really is a massive two fingers up to everybody else on the beach.
Yeah. So if we were to ban jet skis from the island?
Oh, absolutely. I think we should just legalise being allowed to shoot at people on jet ski.
Well, there's that bumper sticker that says, if it's tourist season, why can't we shoot them? Have you seen that bumper sticker?
Well, yeah.
It's a little rude, I think.
A little bit rude, yeah. It's, I think let's stick to fleecing them.
There you go. If it's tourist season, why can't we fleece them? That's actually unspoken here, isn't it? It's like the unwritten law.
Yeah.
I love the unwritten laws of Waiheke. There's another one that says, if you own a BMW 4x4, the disabled parking at the ferry in the middle of the turnaround, that's reserved for you.
Yes.
Anytime you like. It's your parking place. I think it comes in the owner's manual of the BMW 4x4.
Yes. You are better than everybody else now because you own one of these.
They've probably got a list of all the disabled car parks around the world that you can go there. No, it's no worries. All good. All good, yeah.
So you mentioned the breakaway. Tomorrow there's the Hikoi.
Yeah, sounds good.
Alison Park down to the Marae. Are you going to be there?
Absolutely, yes.
I think there's some symbolism we could use with this breakaway Hikoi. What if everybody sort of stood around the beaches and tucked their fingers under the sand and kind of made like a, let's all lift it up and carry it away. You know, it'd be like a symbolic gesture.
Oh, is this one of your art statements again, Alison?
Yeah, it could be like a happening. Well, the Hikoi itself, it's a walk from Alison Park towards the Marae. So there's symbolism in that. We're walking away from...
And apparently there is an enormous hangi being planned.
Yeah.
Which should be very exciting. Yeah. Apparently many, many chickens have been acquired and buried in the hangi. It's all going on at 12 o'clock. Starts off, though, at Alison Park at 11.
And I wonder if helicopters have brought these chickens in.
Oh, God.
Gosh, no, it sounds good. We're going good.
It should be a lot of fun.
The breakaway hangi, you know?
Yeah.
It sounds good. It's got a ring to it.
And you have sailing planned for today, Alex?
Yep, today. Perfect forecast. We've got 10 to 15 knots.
Well, there's nothing at the moment.
Northwest. No, we'll believe in it. I believe in the forecast, and we'll do a little circumnavigation of the island, I reckon.
Excellent. You're going to stop in anywhere? You're going to stop in at Cactus Bay and have a last look before the building?
I could do. And as I come sailing in, you know, the boat will come sailing in silently, so I'll have to go dug, 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 as if I'm a helicopter.
Certainly not a bad day for the beginning of August.
No, there you go. Yeah.
No.
So.
It has been freezing cold, though. But, this is one of these days when you think, okay, if this is winter, I can sort of handle this.
Yeah.
Although you can tell it's August because 9 out of 10 people you talk to right now are sick. Yeah. Everyone's coughing and wheezing and leaking snot.
But I would have thought you would have prescribed a healthy, dark, stout type libation to fix that.
Well, I try to lead by example. Mm. I mean, beer... Yes, but also chilies and garlic. Nature's nightclub bouncers. Eat enough chili and garlic and you don't get sick.
There you go. Well, you don't look sick right now.
I'm not sick right now, and I've eaten lots of chili and garlic this week. Yeah. So, yeah, living proof it works.
Okay, so helicopters, we'll limit them. Eh?
Well, you guys can hop in your helicopters and we'll see you next month.
Yes, we will be keeping on top of this helicopter story because I think it promises to be quite amusing.
Yeah, I don't think we'll be in a position to talk about the Marina case by then? Because I think we can anticipate a long time, can't we, before we get any results out of that?
There's some issues where you just get so weary. You think, oh, come on, it's just like boring, you know, like just get over it. Go put your. Yeah.
Well, there is one thing about the Marina case which is not boring, and that is the regular updates posted by Merrin Lawler, which are utterly brilliant and should probably be compiled into some form of book.
Yeah, literature, well, special Waiheke literature, yeah.
Are they? Brilliant. Because, for anyone listening, if you haven't caught up with the updates that Merrin has been posting on a regular basis, then you really need to do so.
Yeah, so it's got a direction of Matete on Facebook. They're worth a read.
They are really, really amusing, because particularly given how incredibly boring most of the proceedings must be, Merrin manages to actually make it hilarious and very accessible.
Yes. Well, when I go sailing today, I'll have to tramp through the mud because it's low tide, and I will do that with great pleasure. I don't need to trip down a floodlit jetty behind a security gate to get to my walk-on mooring. Yeah, it's not necessary. I'm living proof it's not necessary. And then there are the people that say, look, I'm old and frail, so I need my walk-on mooring. Take a look at me. I look old and frail, and I don't need a walk-on mooring.
Yes.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Old, frail, slightly deranged.
Yeah, that too.
Decrepit even.
So the opinionated islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone, thank you very much for joining us this morning. And they'll be back first Saturday of next month to give us their opinions on Ireland national and international affairs.
Yeah, good luck.
I'm joined now by Bex Ballard from the Waiheke Local Board. Good morning, Bex. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
I can just get you to move a little bit closer to that microphone. So, Bex, we've been kind of catching up with board members, I suppose, almost two-thirds of the way through your term now, just to get a bit of a sense of you know, how things are progressing on the projects and ambitions that people come into the board with. So you came into the board, and I suppose the number one thing that you were looking at in that time was the pool, wasn't it? So, I mean, how would you assess the progress or lack of progress towards that project?
We've got a couple of reports that are definitely moving us forward, and it's been really exciting to actually see a picture of the pool on a map. But we've had a couple of really disappointing setbacks as well. So the first one, which I think a lot of the community are aware of, is Auckland Council stripped a lot of the budgets out of the board. So we lost about $1.4 million, a million which was earmarked for the pool, out of what was now last year's budget. So that was pretty heartbreaking, knowing that we had $1 million to start that project with, and then to have Auckland Council come to all the local boards and say, sorry, this is your budget for the year, but we're pulling it all back. And the second setback we've just had is with the school rebuild. So we'd had the commitment from Nikki Kay that she was going to help with the pool as much as they could during the rebuild. And now that rebuild's been put on hold, that does cause some more difficulties for us. But we're hoping to meet with the school board of trustees soon and see how we can move forward from here.
Realistically, I suppose, if the pool is to be associated with the schools, then, and the school rebuilds are now looking at, what, kind of 5 years' time, aren't they? So really, there's no hope till then, is there?
I wouldn't say so. Where it's currently been positioned on the plans, there is some temporary classrooms there. So that's just going to be a conversation that the pool committee and the local board and the school is going to have together. Yeah, because at the moment we're still at the stage with the high school board of trustees where they've said, you know, we're happy to have the conversation, we're happy to talk about it, but we haven't got a 100% commitment from them that this is something they want to do yet. Yeah. So I guess it's all up for discussion, right? Maybe we could move those classrooms, maybe we could put it somewhere else. Primary school is definitely going to rebuild sooner, was what I was reading in the papers. So I think they're 2016 still, but the high school's out in about 5 years, I think. So
yeah. So you've also been involved with the youth. Well, there's so many of these things I can't get them mixed up. So there's a youth advisory panel, and then there's kind of the Waiheke youth
voice.
Yeah. And so that's what you've kind of been involved with, hasn't it?
Yeah. So the Waiheke youth voice meets fortnightly. We've got a group of about 15 people between 12 and 23, So the projects that we've been working on at the moment, we had an event a couple of months back for the youth in the school holidays, and at the moment we've got a free first aid course for young people running tomorrow, and we're working with council to bring back the Santa parade. So we'll be the youth board will be running the Christmas events this year.
So with the youth event that happened, you know, that was a few months back now, wasn't it? So that got funded by the board. What kind of pick up on that was there?
We had about 140 people there. And there was a little bit of contention around the funding. It actually wasn't funded by the local board. It was funded by the Ministry of Youth Development and by Auckland Council Homegrown Program, which was a youth... it was a program arranged so that youth could apply and run events. So the board actually applied for and received the funding from outside local board sources for that.
And I suppose one of the difficulties with youth organisations is maintaining that momentum, isn't it? I mean, I suppose by definition, people kind of grow out of it.
Yeah, well, it's a 12-month term for the board, so we're actually looking to recruit some new people soon because we had a couple of people move off the island. But other than that, yeah, it's a 12-month commitment, and most of them are still there.
So. Yep. So they're looking at Christmas events, and what any kind of word on what's planned around that at the moment?
So we're looking at bringing back the Christmas parade, like I said. So we're trying to organise that, and then we're just looking at what will happen with sort of carols by the sea, or some being suggested maybe we could have the carols down at the Marae. So we're looking at some options, and we're talking with council events team to see what's possible. And
because I suppose, you know, I mean, the Christmas parade, I mean, I've been to, I don't know how many of those Christmas parades, and you certainly get the little kids there and you get the oldies like me, but there's not many teenagers there.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's an interesting idea to get them to look at organising this.
Yeah, well, I guess that part of the idea is to make it appeal more to youth of a greater range. So we're keen to have, they're going to be emceeing it, and we'll have some music and other things happening as well. So we're trying to bring together the best of what the Santa Parade was and the street party, which sort of had people sticking around in Onewa a bit longer.
And how does all of this intersect with the Council Youth Advisory Panel? Because there's a new Waiheke representative on there as well, isn't there?
Yeah, so we have a Waiheke rep that reports back into the Waiheke Youth Voice and sort of sees what's going on at an Auckland-wide level for youth. So that was Matariki Roche, who's just gone off to Argentina on exchange. And our new rep now is Georgina Halstead. So I was at her inaugural meeting on Monday, and she did an amazing job, did the island proud. She's a very good public speaker.
And so how does the local board work alongside her in that role? What's the connection?
It's sort of hard to explain. I guess it depends to a certain extent what connection the youth want to have. So Matariki used to come to our board meetings and give updates sometimes. But certainly, like, if there's any youth issues that we want feedback on, then we would be going to the Youth Voice and asking them for feedback. And at an Auckland level, it's a little bit looser, the connection with the local board, but we do our best to support them, going to the meetings, etc. And yeah.
So in terms of board portfolio responsibilities, so one of your areas of responsibility is the kind of the open space, that environment portfolio.
Yeah.
So we've recently had some consultation around Alison Park.
Mm.
Yeah. So what were some of the outcomes from that, and what are the next steps from here for Alison Park and for the bowling club?
I think obviously with that, with public spaces now, we're trying to get away from that model where one community group gets an area exclusively. You know, so what's just happened with the old library space is that's been taken over by Adult Literacy. But if you see the proposal they put together, there's a huge remit for them to be sharing that space with other community groups, and particularly the arts community, because it's within the artwork space. So we're wanting to do something similar with the bowling club, where it won't be a lease just to one particular group for their exclusive use, but looking at how we can best use that for the whole community. It's quite a popular space. We've had a lot of requests, a lot of stuff around sort of like marine and environmental education. And, you know, maybe around it being a youth space or being a social services space. So we're still in the process with that. But
so with all these spaces, I mean, you know, so as you say, there's been the old library space. We've got the bowling club. Is the board looking at this like across the whole scope of council-owned facilities, or are you looking at it in a facility-by-facility basis?
We've got a facility review going on at the moment, looking at how we can best use all the spaces, especially with the way...
So isn't that a bit out of kilter? I mean, you know, one space has already been granted. Mm. The other one, you know, the Allison Park and Bowling Club consultation's already underway. Wouldn't it have been better off to have the review beforehand?
Yeah, we've had the request in for the review with council because council was supposed to run it for like 12 to 18 months. So it's been a bit of a frustrating process for us. And we don't want to leave places empty when the community could use them either. So, but I think what will come out of that review is some of our halls that are rented by the hour isn't necessarily working. You know, the rates are too high, so people aren't using them. And what's the point of having a community facility that's empty and no one's using? So we're looking at, you know, what other models there might be and whether it is, you know, a lead tenant that is making that space available to other people so that we can use them more effectively.
Yep. So in terms of board portfolios, I mean, you've got quite a light load compared to the other board members. You know, the five board members, they all have primary responsibility portfolios. You have one area of secondary responsibility. So why is that?
Well, parks is our biggest portfolio. So parks and environment, which is what I'm the secondary lead on, is our biggest portfolio. So it's got quite a big workload. And on top of that, what I do, which isn't an official portfolio, is obviously I'm at the youth board meetings every second week, and doing a lot of work for that in the background. I'm on the community pool committee, seeing how that community group can work with the board. And I'm also on the rec centre trust as well. So I have some other responsibilities that aren't part of the official portfolio structure.
And, you know, at the time, I mean, so we had started off with Sharon Brown as deputy chair, and then the board made the decision you wanted to move into a rotational deputy chair situation. So when do you take it up?
So I'll be the deputy chair from December. And that was an agreement we actually made on the picnic table out there the same day that we got interviewed when we were all first elected, that we were going to have a rotating chair. So it wasn't something that happened later.
Yeah. So the, you know, between now and I suppose, you know, we once we get to this time next year, people are going to be well into the kind of electioneering kind of things. But I mean, between now and that period, and particularly when you take up that deputy chair role, what are the things that you're wanting to tick off that you come into the board saying, you know, we've talked about the pool, and obviously that one's a hard one. But what are the other things that you want to tick off and say, yep, we were going to do this and we've done it?
Mm. I mean, the poll's still the top of my list, despite the challenges. We're still pushing forward with that as much as we can, and I still believe we can do it. That maybe not in the 3-year time frame that we'd hoped for because of the setbacks, but we're still full steam planning for that. My biggest priority is just getting the youth board up and running really well. I mean, we've been going for almost a year now, but you know, I want to leave, if I'm not re-elected, leave a strong youth board in place. And I think we've come a long way with the rec centre as well. So we've still got some things that we want to sort out, but you know, the rec centre has, you know, it's had some challenges with the management, etc. So, but we've got a lot of maintenance done lately, and we're starting to look at how we can run that centre better. And so, yeah, those are my top priorities.
Yeah. So the, and you know, and we talked about Allison Park a little bit. Mm. So you're moving ahead to kind of look at, I mean, as well as the bowling club, there's the whole park.
Mm.
I mean, would you expect to see some progress on that before your term finishes?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't been across that in detail. So.
Yeah. So that, but that's part of the parks thing, isn't it? I mean, that review of that park use.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's strong issues that kind of came out in that in the consultation about what people wanted to see there.
I know there's one particular group that's a like formed a Friends of the of Ellison Park group that yep. are really keen to see something like the Hamilton Gardens.
Yeah,
which is I've been there quite a few times. It's my hometown, so. Whether that's...
I mean, it does yeah. seem, doesn't it? I mean, you mentioned before that mm. there is a lot of interest in the bowling club and a lot of interest in the Ellison Park.
Mm.
But it also seems that all of those groups come away from talking with the board mm. with the impression that their idea is going to be the one that goes ahead.
I've got no idea why that is, because we certainly don't try and tell people that they're going to have something if they're not going to have it. It's, but, I mean, we love hearing about people's ideas and we're... You know, definitely yep. encourage people to come talk to us.
Yeah.
As far as I'm aware, no one from the board's committed to any group that they are going to have a certain outcome at this stage because we're still in the process.
And there's a hurdle, isn't there, of needing to have some kind of reserve plan review or something
yeah.
occur?
Yeah, I think under the current plan, the bowling club can only be a bowling club.
Yeah. So when, you know, what's the time frame for getting that piece of work done?
I'm not sure, sorry, off the top of my head.
Yep. Okay, so, so you know, in terms of the, I mean, you have, what, fortnightly meetings as a board?
We have fortnightly public business meetings, and then we have other portfolio meetings that the public aren't invited to.
Yep. So what's next for you in board events? What, you know, just so people get a sense of, I suppose, what's involved, you know, on a kind of day-to-day, week-by-week basis. What's the next board engagement or business that you're going to be involved in?
I think I'll just grab my calendar. Okay, so I've got a youth board meeting tomorrow night at 5:30, and I'll be at the Hikoi tomorrow, obviously, as, you know, personally, but also as part of my local board role, I'll be there.
How much has that crossed over, that project, into board affairs? Because it does seem, I mean, we've got, well, I mean, certainly, you know, John, Paul Walden and yourself kind of publicly kind of saying that you're in support of it. How do you separate out what the board is charged to as part of Auckland Council from an initiative to pull away?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I mean, I guess if you say what we're charged to do from Auckland Council, then obviously that's nothing to do with breaking away from council. So you'd say it's completely separate. But then if we're here to represent the interests of our community and what's best for the community, then it's very much part and parcel of what the role is. It's an interesting one. Obviously, like, for a lot of us on the board feel like it is in the best interest for the community to break away.
Yeah.
Working with Auckland Council is extremely frustrating and difficult. The amount of time that we spend trying to get basic things across the line. And they don't work very well with the Waiheke model. One thing, there's a couple of things in particular we've really struggled with, which is trying to use volunteers for projects. So you say to the council, oh, it's fine, we've got volunteers to plant these trees or volunteers to run this. And they just can't handle that model. They say, no, we have to pay someone to do it. And we're like, that's ridiculous. But that's how their mentality works. And Waiheke is very much full of people that are happy to volunteer to do things and want to plant trees. And it makes it quite difficult. And that's one of the reasons why we're working with the Waiheke Resources Trust on the Little Onirawa Stream project. Because within council, that's four different departments that are not designed to work with each other. They all work in silos. So if you're trying to make a collaborative thing where you've got all four departments working together with community volunteers, that's just not how Auckland Council works at all. You know, I think if we broke away, we'd have a lot more, we'd be able to do things the Waiheke way a lot easier. We'd also be able to buy things locally. We have a huge amount of problems with local procurement because we have to follow all the Auckland Council procurement policies. And a lot of the contracts for things like roading, parks, cleaning are awarded at an Auckland-wide level. So if we want to hire a local person to be the cleaner for the offices, well, it's quite difficult. They end up bringing in staff from off the island, partly because of the conditions that they're offering or just the way it works. We don't have much control over that. I think if we had our own council, we'd have so much more employment and work that we contract out on the island. I think it would be, you know, you talk about totally locally, spend $10 a week at the local butcher or at a local store and the impact that it would have on the economy. I think the impact would be far, far greater if we had a lot of our rates staying on the island because we could contract work locally and we could employ locals rather than having people sitting in Auckland getting paid from our rates.
I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, hearing you talk about that, you kind of come alive, and you know, and you're expressing a lot of frustration with Auckland Council, and I think this is the first time you've been here since the election. I mean, is it what you thought it would be, being on the local board?
In some ways, it is. I mean, I know that I knew that it was that we didn't have as much power and influence as we would like to have, but it is extremely frustrating how many decisions we aren't allowed to input into. So the whole idea of local boards is that any decision that affects a local area that could be made locally should be made locally, and that's just not the reality. Auckland Council is just such a big, inflexible beast. And I think it would be amazing if we had our own council.
I suppose the other thing that happened, you know, after that last election is that you came in, you know, I mean, with the exception of Paul, a completely new board. And there was a strong sense amongst you of cohesion and joint vision. Is that still there?
Pretty much. We are on the same page on almost all issues at a sort of high level. Definitely in terms of, like, you know, keeping things local and looking after the environment. And, yeah, on a whole, we generally agree on issues. There's been some personality issues more than fundamental, like, what do you call it? Like, we're kind of coming from the same place, but that doesn't mean that we don't have disagreements sometimes.
Well, you'd hope there'd be some disagreements.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much for coming in, Bex. And good luck with the youth stuff. 5:30 on a Sunday seems a bit grim to me for a meeting, but, you know, good on you. Someone has to do that, I suppose.
Yeah, and I guess that's partly my place on the board, right, because I do work a lot as well, that I've got a lot of the commitments that are and the weekends and at nights, like the rec centre, like the pool committee, like the youth board, and those are the hours that I've got to put into it. So
yeah, good on you. Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Bex Ballard from the Waiheke Local Board joining us here on Island Life. You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onewarra.